making plans for the future. Now, there are two weaknesses or two shortcomings about making plans for the future. The two shortcomings about making plans for the future is, first of all, not making plans. Okay? And the second one is making plans. Now, that sounds strange, doesn't it? Let's talk about that for a second. Why is it a mistake to not make plans for the future? Right, it's coming. If you fail to plan, you what? Plan to fail. You ever hear that from Stephen Covey and a lot of other folks? If you fail to plan, you plan to fail. Okay? A ship headed nowhere, guess what? It gets nowhere. It gets there. Okay? What are some ways in which we need to plan our future? Not just church-wise, but just anyway. What are some ways we need to plan? I'll tell you one way is really important to me right now. Kyla told me last night, she said, okay, for Sunday lunch, we're going to have ham and rice and all this other stuff. I'm not going to tell you everything we're having or y'all will show up at my house. But she told me everything she was having, and she prepared it last night and had it in the oven today. Told me I had to be quiet by 11 because we had to go home and eat, which always works for me. But she planned all that out. A whole lot easier than showing up at home when you're ready to eat. And everybody's ready to eat, especially when you got two boys. And they're like, well, what are we going to have? Nobody's ever planned or shopped before. That's a problem, isn't it? What's another reason why it's important to plan? Is it important to think about retirement before you get there? Hopefully. That's a pretty important thing, right? I always tell my kids, you know, whatever job, I don't care what you do when you grow up. Just make lots of money, pay for my retirement. They always kind of snicker at me. I don't know if that'll happen or not. Okay? Church-wise, spiritual-wise, why is it important to plan for the future? Okay. You want to know the destination. Right. You figure out the destination where you want to be, and then you figure out what it's going to take to get there. Okay? You want to go to heaven. What are some other reasons why it's important to plan for the future as Christians or as a church? Because of what? You want to take other people with you. That's right. You want to take other people with you. As a church, it's important that we look at ourselves as a congregation and see what we're doing, where our budget goes, what we spend a lot of our time doing to make sure that we're using our resources in a proper way. Okay? So in that way, it's important to plan for the future. Now, I said the other way you run into trouble when you think about the future is by planning. Now, why do we run in trouble by planning for the future? Let's go ahead and read this passage. So let's start here in verse 13 of James chapter 4. Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we'll go to such and such a city, spend a year there, buy and sell and make a profit. Whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live and do this or that. But now you boast in your arrogance, and all such boasting is evil. Therefore, to him who knows to do good and does not do it, to him it is sin. Okay, what's the danger of planning ahead? You don't know what tomorrow's going to look like. Absolutely right. Okay? You don't know what tomorrow's going to look like. Now, what are some examples in the Bible of where people planned for something to happen and it didn't quite happen that way? You think of any examples? Absolutely. The parable of the rich fool, or the rich man. Here was a man who had a good crop. Corn came good back that year. Actually, out there, they usually grew barley. But it went great. And so he had all these possessions and all. And he looked at himself and he said, self, what am I going to do? He said, I'm going to build bigger barns. I'm going to do this and do that and all these other things. And then I'm going to sit back and just take it easy and enjoy life. Okay? That night, the Lord came to him, and what did the Lord say? You fool. Tonight, your soul is required of you. Then whose will these things belong to? Then whose will these things be? Okay? The problem for this man was not that he made a good living. It's not a sin to make a good living. The problem was, notice how many times he said, I. He'll say it about 9 times in over about 3 or 4 verses. It was all about him. And he planned for the future, but he didn't plan in the right way. You ever see folks who are caught up in themselves and only themselves? Now, don't point to anybody. But you ever see folks who are that way? It's going to come to an end. It will all be over very quickly. and very surely. Sometimes we think we're the center of the universe. And you know, from our perspective, we are, aren't we? 11 years and 3 weeks ago, my dad had a liver transplant. And that was one of those things that was really surreal to me. You know, I knew he'd gone through all these things. He had gotten a blood transfusion in the mid-80s that was tainted with hepatitis. And so we went through the hepatitis, cirrhosis of the liver, liver cancer, to the point where they, you know, finally got this new liver. But, you know, we had all these things happen. You know, they called. He was in Odessa. They called and said, we have to have you in Dallas in the next hour and a half. So he had to charter a private plane to get to Dallas. And then they did all this surgery. And, you know, it was all, he couldn't plan ahead when it was going to happen. But all these things happened. I was living in Mississippi. And Kyla and I drove there real quick. She was pregnant with Nathan. I think, weren't you pregnant with Nathan? Yeah. She was pregnant with Nathan. All these things were going on. And they went through that surgery that night. And you know what was really weird to me? They did that surgery all day, all night. That morning, we'd been up all night, and we were sitting there in Baylor Hospital, downtown Dallas, and the sun came up. That just was really weird to me. And I don't know why. I expected time to stop, and I expected everything to be finished, and, you know, I don't know what it was, but it just, it was so surreal to me to recognize that time doesn't stop for anybody. And you know what? When my time on this earth is done, unless the Lord returns first, you know what's going to happen that next day? That sun's going to go up, and they're going to continue with life just like they always have before. Maybe some people will grieve, but this world's not going to be that much different without me. And that's always been a surreal thing for me. That was something which, you know, I think will always stick with you. You know, you have certain memories in life. That's something that will always stick with me. Sometimes we create ourselves to be the center of the universe, and by doing that, we don't plan properly. What should this rich man have done instead of looking to himself? Okay. All right. He took God for granted. Yes. He took God for granted, took life for granted. He should have recognized the things that needed to change. He should have recognized God's in charge. Now, that doesn't mean it was wrong to build a barn. It doesn't mean it's wrong to prepare for the future or to save for the future. But it's wrong to place yourself as the center of the universe, to not look to serve others, to not think about how you influence other folks and how other folks are influenced by you. And so that's what's going on here as we think about that. Now, who's somebody else who didn't plan for the future in the Bible? Ah, yes, going all the way back to the book of Esther. Haman. Remember Haman's gallows? Okay. Quick review of the book of Esther. You got Esther, you got her uncle, Mordecai, and you got a man who hates the Jews named Haman. And then, of course, you got King Xerxes. What happens is Esther, at the very beginning, wins a beauty contest and gets to be queen. Her life is pretty good. Well, that happens, and then you have Haman who decides he's angry at Mordecai because Mordecai doesn't bow to him the way that he thinks he needs to be bowed to. And so Haman decides he's not only mad at Mordecai, but he's mad at all the other Jews. And so he decides he's going to develop a plan where all the Jews will be put to death. So he requires, works many different ways, and a king passes a law saying all the Jews have to be put to death. Well, of course, as you go through it, that's the third week in a row he sneezed back there. Okay. Isn't that weird? Did you remember things like that? Okay. Who put the sneezing powder in the radio room? All right. The king passes a law saying that you have to destroy all the Jews. Well, Mordecai comes to Esther and says, you're queen, you need to go. And Mordecai, or Esther says, I don't want to. Esther 4:14. For perhaps for this time God has raised you up for such a time as this, but if you do not do it, God will raise up another. His purposes will not be defeated. But Haman has created these high gallows so that he can hang Mordecai from them. Esther comes in, and she says, I want to have a feast with you, king. And the king says, great. And so Esther says, well, listen, let's have Haman come and eat with us too. And Haman's like, this is great, this is wonderful, everybody's going to love me. And so Haman is sitting there thinking things are great. And Esther sits down at the table with them as they're all reclining there, as they did back in the Oriental times. And the king says, well, what's the meeting about? And Esther says, this man is trying to kill me and trying to kill all my people. And the king gets so angry, he leaves the room, and Haman begins begging for his life, and he falls upon Esther begging for his life. And the king walks in and says, not only are you trying to kill my wife, but now you're all over. And so he hangs Haman from those gallows. So that's an excellent example. He designed those gallows to hang somebody else, and he ended up, he and his family, hanging from them himself. Okay? That's an excellent example. That's right. Moses planned to go to the promised land, and that didn't work out because of his sins. That you're right. He had a lot of plans, but he didn't always go according to God's purpose. He tried to free the people in his own power by murdering that Egyptian, and that didn't work. He spent 40 years in the wilderness, and then he also suffered because of his striking the rock and taking the place of God. Okay, that's an excellent example, too. You think of any others? All right, man who worked 14 years to get the woman that he wanted. That's right. He sure did. That's right. Talking about Jacob, married Leah, married Rachel. Absolutely. Paul's plans were changed a little bit. He got ended up playing on the other team, didn't he? What you got, Corey? Right, right. Absolutely. Corey's bringing up the apostles who had planned to follow Jesus, thought it was going to be a physical kingdom. Their last words to him was, Lord, at this time, are you going to restore the kingdom? And he said, you do not understand. You know the nature of the kingdom. James and John, the sons of thunder, appeared before Jesus. And what was it they asked of Jesus? One gospel has his mother asking, the other gospel has them asking. What did they ask? That they sit at the right hand, the left hand of the Lord in his kingdom. Now, their idea was Jesus was going to be king, they're going to be princes, and it was going to be a great life and a great situation, right? What'd it turn out to be? He was the first person put to death, James, or the first of the apostles put to death. James was beheaded by Herod, wasn't he? John spent a life in exile, and a life of great difficulty, as you read 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John. They both had that prayer answered. They both had that special place in the kingdom, but it was a difficult situation. All right? Looking at us personally, what are some ways in which our plans have changed? Can you think of any? I was looking through some old notes of mine, bulletins and pictures and stuff. I've got them out in the garage in a bookshelf. And I ran across, you know how we send those sheets out with the kids that graduate high school with their picture and their biography and everything. Do we do that here? I haven't been here long enough to know if we do that, but pretend we do. I was looking at mine, and it said I was going to go to the University of Texas, and I was going to become a doctor, and I was going to move back to Odessa, Texas, and, you know, just live a wonderful, great life. I had my whole life planned out. I haven't quite attended the University of Texas yet, and I sure haven't become a doctor yet. You know, but you know, I look back in the providential things which have changed my life, and I'm a lot happier now than I would have been if God would answer my prayers the way I wanted to back then. God works through our life providentially, and things are better. Do you have any instances in your life where things have changed, different than your plans? A few? You got to retire earlier. Okay. That's good stuff. That's good stuff. I had a person, a salesman, come by the other day, and I think he was selling insurance, or I'm not even sure what he was selling. He said, what age do you plan on retire? I said, as late as possible. I'm a preacher. You try to keep hanging on as long as you can. Okay, let's go ahead and start with the text. You who say today or tomorrow we'll go to such and such a city, spend there a year there, buy and sell and make a profit, you don't even know what's going to happen tomorrow. Your life is nothing more than a what? Vapor. I knew a lady in a nursing home I used to visit in Tupelo. She was 110. No, she's 103. She's 103. And, you know, back then, being a little punk kid, I guess you'd say, I'd ask questions that sometimes would embarrass me now. I said, what's it feel like to be 103 years old? And she said, I don't feel a day over 80. Well, you know, I thought, well, okay. You know what it feels like to be 80. You know. But what's neat when you talk to somebody who's 100 years old is inside, they're the same person they were when they were 20. They move a whole lot slower. But, you know, we don't realize how long life or how short life is, do we? My kids look at me and they realize I'm going to turn 40 next year. And in their mind, how old is 40? Man, I was a Noah's Ark in their mind, right? Okay. Now that I'm turning 40, to some of y'all in this room, how old does that feel? You're like, oh man, y'all got a long ways to go, right? Yeah. You know, life just goes by so fast, doesn't it? Why does God make us that way, to where we feel like life goes by so quickly? Or why does life go by so quickly for us? The older you get, the faster it goes. That's right. That's right. It just speeds up, doesn't it? Absolutely speeds up. When I was a kid, it took forever for Christmas to come. Now it comes way too quick. Nathan was telling me yesterday what he wanted for Christmas. I was thinking, we just went through that. You know, life speeds up, doesn't it? Why does God make us temporary, physically, you think? You ever think about that? Why does God make us temporary? This goes back a little bit to Genesis. Okay, we've got to keep a long view of eternity. That's right. You go back to the people who lived a long time. Think Noah's day. Okay? What tended to happen to them? Well, they died. That's right. You know, you look at those guys, every one of them died. That's right, except for Enoch. But what happened to the people in Noah's day? How would you describe them? They got really wicked, okay? They tended to become conceited, and they tended to become wicked, okay? God, in many senses, as we read there from Genesis 6, well, really Genesis 4, 5, and 6, going through chapter 10, it looks like one of the graces of God is to shorten the lifespan of man. Now, I look at that and I think, no. I want people to be on this earth longer because I love them and I enjoy being around them. But God, in His wisdom, has created us to be a certain way. Now, how does that change our perspective? Knowing we're not going to be here forever. How does it need to change our perspective? Realizing that we're nothing more than a vapor. It's here today and gone tomorrow. 104. Really? Well, good. Good. Yeah. Yeah. There you go. And you see, they made a great impression. Let's talk about impressions for a second. Okay? This is probably everybody. If your parents have passed, how many of you know where they're buried? Pretty much everybody. How about your grandparents? Okay. Do y'all know where your great-grandparents are buried? Okay, good number. How about your great-great-grandparents? Probably a good number. Okay, Kyla. How about your great-great-great-great-grandparents? Do you know that too? The point I'm making, except for Kyla, the point over in Wayne County, Tennessee. My parents have a huge influence on me. My grandparents have an influence on me, although it's not as great. Great-grandparents came down during, you know, right through the Great Depression or a little bit before the Great Depression, through Missouri, through Oklahoma. I hear stories about them, but they don't make much of an impression. The people before that, I'm really not sure. I've never done all the genealogy stuff and all those sort of things. My mother did it one time. She said there's too many circles in the tree, so she quit. Well, how much influence are we going to have on those after us? One of the things we have to realize is how temporary we are, but also how permanent we are. Was it they say in 100 years, it's not going to matter the car you drive, the house you live in, the job you had, or the money you made. In 100 years, what's going to matter? Where you're spending eternity. And perhaps the influence you had on your children. Perhaps I'll be there. Remember how short life is. And remember how short those things are. And that's why he says here in verse 15, instead you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live and do this or that. But now you boast in your arrogance, and all such boasting is evil. What's the point he's making there? Instead, you need to say, if the Lord wills. He's not saying don't plan, but he's saying plan remembering what? You're not in charge. God is in charge. If God lets me live, then that's what I'm going to do. If God lets it be his will, then that's how I'm going to live. Now, how does that change perspective? Look at your checkbook. How does that change perspective if you say, okay, if God wills, that's what I'm going to do? It helps you spend a different way, doesn't it? How does that change your time? If you always remember eternity and you always remember who's in charge, do you spend your time differently than a person in the world would? Absolutely. A lot of people look at us and think we're the weirdest people ever. Because you stay up late Saturday night and you get up and come to church at 9 o'clock Sunday morning. This is good sleeping time. This is good fishing time. This is good hanging out on the porch time. And yet here we are in dress clothes sitting inside this building. And from the perspective of the world, that's crazy. But why is it wise? The Lord deserves his time, doesn't he? And he's the one in charge, and so we give it to him. And other people look at that and think it's the craziest thing ever. It's the strangest thing ever. That's right. That's right. He's talking about the finite nature of man and the infinite nature of God. Now, man lives for eternity, but on earth, it's a very finite time. We have a starting point and a finishing point on our gravestone, don't we? But God goes all the way back here, and he goes all the way in that way. And I bet God has an interesting perspective upon us. Because he heard the problems and the prayers of Adam, of Eve, of Seth, of Caleb, of Noah, of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, of Manoah, of David, of Solomon, of all the apostles and all the people after the apostles. For, what, 10,000, 11,000 years, God has seen man upon the earth. And you know what? We're not really that different than we've been before. We still deal with many of the same issues, and many of the same doubts, and many of the same problems in life. And so God has a very unique perspective upon us, doesn't he? As he sees how those things work, and he sees how those things go along. How does it change your perspective when you say, if the Lord wills? Uh-huh. Yeah, you plan that way. How does that relieve stress? Do you ever feel stress in life? Somebody told me it's a sin to be stressed. It's a sin to be consumed with worry. I hope it's not a sin to be stressed, because I'm always stressed. How does a Christian escape stress? You do the best you can do, and then you recognize what? What you can't do. You recognize Jesus is there. That you can't fix every problem. You can't fix every mistake, and you can't control everybody. Those kids actually grow up, and they have a mind of their own. And free will. You recognize God's in charge. And my job is not to fix the problem of everything that I face. My job is to be faithful to God and to help other people get to heaven. And when you get that perspective, life is very different, isn't it? And life is very unique. And that's a good thing. Now let's look at that last verse, because in a sense it looks like it's out of place. Therefore, to him who knows to do good and does it not, to him it is sin. Okay, now we bring that up a lot of times when we're defining sin in our sermons. You've got this one that says, if you know to do good and you do it not, it is sin. We go over to 1 John and we say that all lawlessness is sin. That's the way we define sin, right? Okay, why did he bring that up here? What's the context we're looking at? The context we're looking at is your life, the life that you're living, correct? That's the context we're looking at. Recognize you're nothing more than a vapor. Recognize that God is in charge of life. Recognize that this is the way life works. Now, look at verse 15. Therefore, if you know to do good and you do it not, it's sin. What's James getting across here? As you said, life is finite, and so what is it you need to do? Get to work. Right. Okay.
David was charged with two sins.
Yes.
If he was living today, no telling how many sins he was charged with.
Right. Oh, absolutely. You take Bathsheba, you got 8 of the commands broken. But yeah, those are the two sins we have recorded, the census and Bathsheba, correct? But we know that he failed more often than that. Now, here we are, a finite time. And everybody we know has a finite time. You're in a situation, I'm in a situation, where I'm talking to somebody and it comes about to their soul. God has allowed 2 ships to pass during the night. Do you take advantage of that opportunity? If you don't, will that opportunity come back? Don't know if it will or not. If you ever get to reading debates, I'm a debate reader. I don't really like attending them anymore, but I like reading debates. There's a fascinating debate between Churches of Christ and Baptist churches. Bogard. Anytime you see a debate with Bogard, Bogard was a very able Baptist pastor. And he usually states their positions about as well as anybody. The Hardeman-Bogard debate's really good. The Woods-Bogard debate, even though that's later in Bogard's life, is pretty good. Fascinating stuff to read. We got it in our church library. So look at those books if you'd like to. Okay? You go through the Hardeman-Bogard debate, you see really in the most eloquent way the positions on either side given. What's interesting is to go back in Bogard's life. Bogard was raised in, I think he was raised in Arkansas. When he was 14, he attended one of these camp meetings, if you will. Listened to the preacher preach for 2 weeks. And it was a Church of Christ preacher who was preaching pure New Testament Christianity. Every one of Bogard's friends responded to the gospel. Bogard came that close. But for some reason, he didn't. And later in life, he never could explain exactly why he didn't. But he came that close, but he held himself back. Now, as the years went by, callousness grew and grew and grew, and he ended up being a thorn in the side of many New Testament Christians for the next few decades. Now, simple biography, probably oversimplified of his life. But there was someone who had opportunity to obey pure New Testament Christianity, but let that opportunity pass and allowed themselves to become callous and never took the opportunity again. Now, in our life, God gives us opportunity. But because we are finite in nature upon this earth, there's only a finite number of opportunities which we have. The thing about life is you need to take the opportunities when we're there. Not a lot of teenagers in here. Teenagers have a word they love. Well, it's almost out of style now, so don't go home and tell it to any kid because a kid will look at you like you're crazy. Drake, who's a rapper, came out with a song, and in that song he talks about YOLO, Y-O-L-O. And you might see something that a kid puts on Facebook or whatever says that. Y-O-L-O stands for You Only Live Once. And what he says in that rap song is you're only on this only in this world once, you only live once. Take every opportunity you have. Now, don't tell Travis I told you this because it's bugged Travis like crazy, and he's wanting to preach a sermon against YOLO. Because what some people have done is they've taken YOLO to say, man, let's just do something stupid, get drunk, and drive down the road because you only live once. And some people have taken it in that way. But the way the rap song's put together is actually recognize that life is a gift and you've only got one chance to live it. and take whatever opportunity you have to live that life for whatever purpose it can be.
And remember that every good thing you do will cover a multitude of sins.
That's right. That's right. The grace of God covers a multitude of sins. That's right. And as far as reaching out to others, and we're going to get to that here pretty quick. You're right, in James chapter 5. I say pretty quick. Next couple of weeks, if the Lord wills. Now, nobody ever lays in their deathbed and says, man, I wish I just sat around the house more and watched more TV, right? Nobody lays in their deathbed and says, man, I wish I didn't go to church so much, right? When you reach the end of life and you look back, what is it that you treasure? Family, and the time you spent with your family. You appreciate those opportunities you had for relationships and for influence and for relationship you had with God. All right.
Sometimes also, and this is getting back to
yeah.
I don't want it to sound that way.
Yeah.
Sometimes when you find time for yourself to do some things that are enjoyable.
Yeah, yeah. Take times for yourself that are enjoyable.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
Above the call of duty sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When I was a teenager, I worked with one of our deacons in the church. He was a fireman, had 2 days off, worked one day, that sort of thing. He would do construction, and he found that young guys, you know, you give them just a little bit of money, they're tickled. You didn't have to pay them as much as everybody else, and we would haul shingles up and down ladders all day. You know, it was really easy for them. What he'd do as a reward is he'd haul us to Colorado. He bought one of the old church buses we had and put bunk beds in it. We'd go to Colorado and drive around Colorado living inside a bus and not showering for like 2 weeks, which if you're a teenage guy is just awesome, you know, trying to grow some form of a beard. But, I look back at that. That was a lot of fun. I don't know if I'd want to do it again, but it's a good memory to have. All right. Here we are in a finite time, looking at the life in which you've lived. Have you squeezed out of life what you want to squeeze out? If your life is over right now, what would you regret that you haven't done? Because God has given you blessing. Now remember, God's in charge. You have to think of everything as if the Lord wills, and you have to think of everything as in, this is not finite because you have eternity. But don't live your life like your life is going to go on forever and ever and ever. Don't put off the obedience. Don't put off the good deeds. Don't put off those opportunities that are there, because one day those opportunities will be gone. One day those hearts that are opened will eventually be calloused. And one day the ability we have to do things, those abilities will be gone. I think that's what James is getting there in verse 15. Therefore, to him who knows to do good, if he does it not, it's missing the mark. It's sin. It's not what it needs to be. Take opportunities. Take advantage. Live life. Realize it's a vapor. Realize it's going to be gone. So do what you can while you're here. Okay, any final comment? Okay, perspective has to do with your age.
When I was your age, I could look at things and say, well, I can do this anytime. I got 25 years here. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
But when you get my age, you start taking your time and making it count now, because I know that I don't have probably 25 years that I can go to Smoky Mountains and walk up Penguin Dome and look over the beautiful country.
Mm-hmm.
I know that I don't have that many years. So my much different than when I was 40, because when
yeah.
I was 40,
yeah.
I was bulletproof.
Yeah.
I knew I was going to die, but it was going to be way out there.
Way a long time away.
So perspective has to do with where we are in life.
Yeah.
Live one day at a time.
A passage, you know, when you preach, well, this is the problem the preacher has, nobody else has. I need about an hour and a half to go through Isaiah 64. I don't think anybody else wants me to take an hour and a half to go through Isaiah 64. No amens. But one of the beautiful passages there in Isaiah 64, it's verse 3 or 4, is we are a leaf, we are but a leaf upon a tree, and with the withering of wind we fall. Think about that as the fall comes. Each one of us, in a sense, are like a leaf on a tree, and we're drying, we're withering. Now, some leaf comes off when it's still green. We see some people dry. And we see brown and all wrinkly, and they stay a lot longer. That doesn't describe it. But you know what? Every one of those leaves are going to fall.
The leaf has no contemplation of dying, though.
That's right. In the beginning, God created the heavens. That's correct. That's correct.
You talked about God's intentions in the beginning when he created man was not for man to fall like he did in the garden. It wasn't his intention for Adam to sin. So when Adam did sin, I mean, had he not sinned, what would have been man's life been like? It wouldn't be that particular point. Talk about it, so I'm
Well, we're supposed to be out of time just about. What he said was it was not God's intention for man to sin, but when he did sin, he took care of it. Now, where you run in trouble with that is God had the church in his mind before the creation. God had the idea that he was going to sacrifice Jesus before the creation. That gets into some deep stuff. You know, how God is good, God can plan, and God can create. Yeah, that's a deep conversation right there now. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he repented the way which man was made. And he changed it, shortened those lifespans. That's right. That's right. All right, thank you for being here. Thank you for all your participation. I'm letting you out a little early. Now, recognize this is a church clock that's up here. Everybody look at the clock. This is a church clock. Church clocks never run late. Okay? That clock is, when I moved here 3 months ago, that clock was 2 minutes fast. Right now, that clock is 6 minutes fast. If your pacemaker lets out in your heart, get those batteries, okay? Because that is a church clock. Okay, thank you for being here. Enjoyed having you here.